Thank you. I hope in looking over the program and seeing my name and my affiliation that you did not Google UATX, because you would have been misled to think that I am somehow involved with some sort of Mexican organization that I'm totally unfamiliar with. I will get to the UATX affiliation towards the end of my talk. And I think this is the announcement that Bill might have been referring to yesterday that I will make later. I'm very grateful to the Philadelphia Society and to my most excellent friend, Bill McClay, for inviting me to address the crisis in higher education today and to hopefully point towards a way forward. I'm also grateful to my interlocutors, Clifford Humphrey, Gabriel Calzada, and Glenn Arbery, all of whom I admire for the institutions that they support and sustain, and for wrangling with my fragmentary and discordant thoughts on these matters. I look very much forward to our conversation and to all of your questions. The litany of challenges facing higher education is long and familiar. The cost of a college degree continues to rise precipitously. Academic programs have degenerated into trivial pursuits. Institutions of higher learning are ideologically imbalanced. Universities are failing to prepare graduates for work in our fluid and dynamic world. The work of teaching is increasingly offloaded to exploited adjuncts. Administrations are bloated, and university leaders, increasingly corporate in orientation, have ceded moral authority to Twitter and Facebook. All of these claims are true to an extent, but they are symptoms of a greater malaise. As G.K. Chesterton declaimed, education is the soul of a society as it passes from one generation to another. What then is the fate of education in a society that no longer attends to the soul? The patron saint of Western education is Socrates. The rightly ordered soul, he teaches us, balances epistemic humility with epistemic conviction. Our nature is to learn. Our orientation is to come to know the world as best we can. Our condition is such that we can never know things absolutely. The pathway of education inclines upwards, following our own development and maturation. Primary and secondary schools cultivate the tools for learning and the temperament of learners. Higher education is that which moves us from the foundational questions, who, what, when, where, and how, to the seminal question, why. The telos of the university is the pursuit of truth. To be more specific, higher learning seeks behind what is evident, verifiable, and manifest, past facts, data, and empirical phenomena, for the answer to the question why these things are so. Napoleon was indeed defeated at Waterloo. Molecular oxygen is a diatomic molecule that is composed of two oxygen atoms held together by a covalent bond. Rage is the first word of the Iliad. History, chemistry, and poetry teach us such things, to which we rightly respond, yes, this may be so, but why? At the medieval university, theology reigned as Regina Scientiarum, the queen of the sciences. At the end of the chain of all questions, why was readily evident. Order was divine and revealed. We now live in the age of I, an era of atomic individualism. We have moved from being seekers of meaning to makers of meaning. Narratives buffet one against the other in an endless struggle for domination. The role of universities in this account is to ruin the sacred truths, to smash orthodoxies, so as to liberate the individual, to pursue a nebulous sort of self-fulfillment. Yet that is only one end of the spectrum. On the opposite pole, we find in this age something akin to divine revelation, to an enlightened few. A totalizing narrative has been unveiled. History is a sequence of injustices. The purpose of human striving is to ensure that the past is not the future. The end point of history is a state of universal equity. The function of universities in this account is to quicken the process. So on one extreme, we find that there is nothing that can be known, that everything is relative to the protean individual. The will to power is celebrated, and the end of humanity is to transcend any and all limitations. The answer to why is because that is what I desire. And at the other extreme, we have unveiled the cultic meaning of history. The exercise of power is always accompanied by domination and submission and is thus innately immoral. The highest pursuit is the singular pursuit of justice. Because we inhabit an exclusively flat, immanent, and material universe, justice is defined as the leveling of all hierarchies in the quest for universal human well-being. The answer to why is because that is what is just. The first premise, the valorization of desire, leads to chaos and nihilism. The second premise, to totalitarianism. Yet the modern university is committed to both these principles, even though they are contradictory and oppositional. On the one hand, we find the untethered will, and on the other, the individual will melts into the undifferentiated collective. This schizophrenia underlies most of the pathologies that we find in higher education today. To renew higher education, the Socratic questions ought to be the animating questions of the university. What can we know? How can we come to know it? How can we come to know ourselves as knowers? We must recall and recommit to Aristotle's dictum, wisdom begins with wonder. Education derives from educare, to lead out of. That is, education is meant to lead us out of ignorance. I would like to suggest that for higher education to fulfill its purpose, it must be grounded in three principles: remembrance, independence, and transcendence. Remembrance. In the ancient world, the boundary between Hades and Elysium was formed by the river Lethe. One drink from its waters would induce oblivion. It was the river of forgetfulness. The Greek word for truth, aletheia, alethi, means literally not forgetting. Memory is the predicate of truth. To commit to the pursuit of truth, universities must remain sites of remembrance. In many ways, universities form our collective memory. They provide archives of what we have learned and are the institutions that carry that learning forward. Their activities sit at the conjunction of the past and the future. We are each of us not the first person to try to sort out the great questions of life. Countless answers have been proposed, and the most compelling answers have been collected into something we think of as a tradition. This tradition has many tributaries: literature, geometry, neuroscience, aesthetics, subjects practically innumerable. Yet tradition is really just a great conversation, concluded across time and place, mostly through objects called books, but also through experiments, orations, and works of art. Our work is to pick up the thread of these conversations. Through this, our individual memory is metamorphosed into something that projects infinitely beyond the time and space of our own circumstance. Universities are not only sites of remembrance, that is, places where knowledge is archived, but also institutions that habituate us to memory. They teach us that what we think or feel now has been thought and felt by others. They help us to rightly size our thoughts and feelings. Yet our age is one that fetishizes the present. What does it mean to say that we are modern? Not that we inhabit the most recent point in time. Every civilization is modern in this sense. But it means that we value above all else a perpetual now. Now is better than then. It is better because now is ours. Moreover, now is a hungry beast that consumes and digests all that has come before. The modern spirit is animated by forgetting. Only by effacing the past can the individual will triumph. This was Nietzsche's credo. The person, he writes, who cannot set himself down on the crest of the moment, forgetting everything from the past, who is not capable of standing on a single point like a goddess of victory, without dizziness or fear, will never know what happiness is. This sort of happiness is now the telos of universities. It is the happiness of the predator, of the Übermensch. We see this in the brutalist architecture defacing campuses, in libraries divesting themselves of books, in the dismissal of canons, in the toppling of statues. Universities must remain countercultural by insisting that to be fully human is to remember. The end is not nostalgia. The ivy and the quad are not the point. They are rather manifestations of a temperament which is open to, even eager for, conversation in the service of truth, and which will seek that conversation in all quarters. Attending to the past is very much about living in the present. As Yaroslav Pelikan explained, tradition is the living faith of the dead. Traditionalism is the dead faith of the living. Tradition lives in conversation with the past while remembering where we are and when we are, and that it is we who have to decide. We embrace the past, we remember out of necessity. To forget is to abjure truth, independence. All education is either liberal or illiberal. Frederick Douglass was unequivocal. Education means emancipation. It means light and liberty. It means the uplifting of the soul of man into the glorious light of truth, the light only by which men can be free. The intellectual tradition of the West has always been a quest for clarity. The primal tale of the search for truth is that told by Plato in the allegory of the cave. Prisoners chained to chairs take the shadows of things passing to be the things themselves. The free person is the one who, released from his shackles, ascends from the shadow-filled cave into the searing light of a sunlit day. A liberal education is one which insists on looking at things fully illuminated, even when it is painful to do so. The report of the Committee of Freedom of Expression at Yale University in 1974 identified the lineaments of academic freedom as the right to think the unthinkable, discuss the unmentionable, and challenge the unchallengeable. In this spirit, Robert Maynard Hutchins pronounced, "A liberal education frees a man from the prison house of his class, race, time, place, background, family, and even his nation." Hutchins did not mean that such things as family, country, or faith should be dismissed. Rather, he understood that human beings are greater than the sum of our parts, that we are not simply a kaleidoscope of identities, as some would have today, but that we transcend categories. This, I think, is what it means to have a soul. Souls are equitably distributed. Each of us is animated by logos. Each of us is a creature imbued with rationality. We are most free when we are unencumbered in our search for truth. We are least free when we substitute the pursuit of other ends, pleasure, power, pride, in place of the pursuit of truth. In order for universities to offer a liberal education, they must be institutions that foster liberty. Yet they have become prison houses of class, race, time, and background. This is acutely evident in the prevalence of speech codes, discriminatory hiring practices, and restrictions on academic freedom, all of which conspire to create ideological conformity. The contemporary university is held thrall to theories of emancipation that are really veiled attempts to redistribute power. These theories assert that all that has been said, thought, accomplished, even experienced before now, is tainted. They demand a cleansing, a purging, a purification. In settling upon this totalizing narrative, they turn away from questions, convinced that answers are readily evident. The manual has been written. The time for searching has passed, and it is now time for action and implementation. Yet Kant was right. Out of the crooked timber of humanity, no straight thing was ever made. Universities ought to sit at the conjunction of orthodoxy and heterodoxy. They ought to be institutions that preserve what they have inherited while scrupulously assessing that inheritance. They should be animated by a persistent question: is what I see the real thing, or is it merely a shadow? However, we must acknowledge that we all see through a glass darkly. Our observations are occluded by 1,000 intervening veils. The narrowness of our experience, the shallowness of our temperament, our pride. All real education, therefore, is rooted in self-examination. Universities should be places where strong convictions are lightly held, where the pursuit of truth is iterative, a collective endeavor unfolding over time, grounded in conversations, which, given the failings of us all, should be attended by generosity and grace. Only then will the truly liberating effect of education take hold, which is first and foremost to free us from ourselves. Transcendence. What is higher in higher education are its aspirations. Universities are the central institutions of what Locke termed the commonwealth of learning. We collect in these institutions scholars who sit outside the hurly-burly of commerce and public life so that they might focus, each in their own discipline, on the pursuit of truth. To do so earnestly is no easy thing. It takes passion and the conviction that the pursuit of truth is essential. As Locke made clear, he that would seriously set upon the search of truth ought in the first place to prepare his mind with a love of it. There is nobody in the commonwealth of learning, he writes, who does not profess himself a lover of truth, and there is not a rational creature that would take it amiss to be thought otherwise. Students join universities as transitory guests. What they study fades rather quickly. Yet the true purpose of education is not the transfer of information, but transformation. Under the tutelage of professors and in the company of books, they are initiated into the commonwealth of learning. They are or ought to be imbued with a love of truth. They will thus be oriented towards what is transcendent. Transcendence is simply the love of truth. I have, perhaps recklessly, made reference several times to the soul. What I mean in the simplest sense is a sort of compass that points us towards a true north. The soul is that which points us away from what is corporeal and present towards the eternal question, why? This is why the abdication of truth at universities is such a dangerous thing. Universities have not simply given up upon transcendence. They view the orientation towards transcendence as at best naive and at worst something threatening. Committed only to what is material and imminent, the modern university is at war with the very notion of truth. There are, of course, other institutions which orient us towards what is transcendent. But in a free society, which is of necessity a pluralistic society, universities set the standard for our common civic pursuits. When we fail to cultivate the orientation towards truth, the debates that are at the heart of democratic self-governance degenerate into the scrum of power and self-interest. The evidence that universities have turned away from the pursuit of truth is readily available. Administrators are elevated over professors. Athletics are more attended to than academics. Excellence is an encumbrance. Success is calculated by return on investment. Elite universities with mottos such as Lux et Veritas obsessively pursue prestige. The claim that they might seek Veritas is now an embarrassment. And Lux now stands for luxury amenities and luxury beliefs. Meanwhile, most other institutions are in a dogfight for an increasingly diminishing number of students. Principals and rigors are luxuries they can ill afford. All the while, the young face a crisis of mental health. Anonymous digital mobs bully and bruise individuals. Our political system is in disarray. Our social fabric is rent. This is not surprising in a society that effaces history, promotes dependence, and insists that existence is exclusively material and one-dimensional. These values have been incubated in academic journals and the faculty lounge. They are the distillation of a false principle, namely that all relations are relations of power, that human life is a zero-sum contest between those who would dominate and those who are compelled to submit. In the face of falsehoods riddling our society, we need to recommit to the pursuit of truth. We need institutions to uphold the principles of remembrance, independence, and transcendence. We need to reclaim what is higher in higher education. In May of this year, a small group gathered in Austin, Texas, to address this crisis. The historian Neil Ferguson, the journalist Barry Weiss, former president of AEI Arthur Brooks, evolutionary biologist Heather Hying, tech entrepreneur and visionary Joe Lonsdale, and I, as president of St. John's College. Some believe that reform is possible from within higher education. We do not. We also believe that it is urgent that we begin to address this crisis now. So we have embarked upon a project that is perhaps audacious. We have decided to found the next great American university, the University of Austin. This institution will be committed to a set of principles. Universities devoted to the pursuit of truth are the cornerstones of a free and flourishing democratic society. For universities to serve their purpose, they must be fully committed to freedom of inquiry, freedom of conscience, and civil discourse. In order to maintain these principles, our university will be fiercely independent, financially, intellectually, and politically. Our work now is to build this institution from the ground up. We have been joined by many fellow travelers: Steven Pinker, Ayan Hirsi Ali, Robert Zimmer, Jonathan Haidt, Glenn Lowry, Nadine Strawson, David Mamet, Leon Cass, Gordon Gee, Jonathan Rauch, and our very own Bill McClay. And many others have joined us, and our numbers are growing daily. The resources needed for such a project are steadily coming in and will soon enable us to launch our first programs. Our commitment to reform extends from the principles of freedom of inquiry, freedom of conscience, and civil discourse to include the pillars that will preserve these principles: a new financial model for higher education, and a curriculum that will synthesize what is finest in the liberal arts tradition with a university that will support advanced scholarship and research in the humanities and sciences. We are acutely aware of the challenges. We anticipate a hostile response from entrenched interests and blowback from an aggravated section of the public. We understand the difficulties of preserving the original mission over the vicissitudes of time and with the turbulence of a declining political order. Yet our hope is to create an institution for students and faculty who are quicker to ask questions than to settle on answers, who are eager to listen and who are deliberate in speech, who are compelled to search beyond the utility of who, what, when, where, and how to the transcendence of why. If we are successful, perhaps the statues of our founders may make it into the next century. Thank you very much.